Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We are here Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., Wednesdays at 9 a.m., streaming live at those times at richarddugan.com. We're also Monday through Friday from 8 to 9 a.m., and still streaming at those times. Podcasts from these programs are on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Stitcher, Player FM, Blueberry, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, and many other locations. We're also on YouTube where you can watch these conversations. We hope you'll subscribe and click notification so that when a new conversation is posted, you will be able to tap into that. And I hope that you will do that. We also are asking that if you can support us financially in some fashion, we would greatly appreciate that. We have a PayPal account. It is there for your security as well as ours. And we ask that you use the email address of richard@richarddugan.com when they ask you, to whom are you sending? And it's richard@richarddugan.com. We also ask that you take time to spend time going within and listening to that still small voice and just taking it easy, relaxing. Where we live here on the central coast of California, here in the United States, after all of the rains that we've had thus far, everything is so green and beautiful, and the animals in the wilderness where we live are out there and making noise. You can hear the birds singing and so forth, and it's just wonderful to just sit out there and just take it in, and it helps to calm the nerves, if you will. It's really a wonderful antidote, if you will. Today's program, we have a very special guest, a young man who has written a book, and it's an unusual title, at least the first part of it is, An 18-Year-Old's Guide to Self-Mastery. And of course, you can guess where I'm going to start this conversation, but I want to welcome to our program, Ryan Quirk. He is our guest. He's the author of the book. Ryan, welcome to Tell Me Your Story.
Hi, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Dugan, for having me. It's an honor to be here.
It is a pleasure to have you. You have written this book, and as I said, it's an unusual title because, first of all, you sort of date yourself in the respect of it's an 18-year-old. Well, you're not 18 anymore, and when you're 80, well, that book is still going to be there. So then you're going to have to revise it every year. I think a 19-year-old, although maybe not so because. It was at 18 that you developed this guide for self-mastery.
Yes.
How did you, first of all, determine what self-mastery is? And at the ripe old age of 18, put together a book that gives us a guide to said self-mastery?
Yes. So I think the first principle of self-mastery is when one starts looking for answers inside instead of outside, right? So we live in a society that is often, you know, we see lots of people struggling with things like anxiety, depression, ill health, and we tend to look for our solutions in the outside world. You know, if I just had a new relationship, if I just got a little bit more, you know, better in my finances, right? And these are wonderful things to pursue and to improve, but that real mastery over your life starts within, not outside, right? You know, we see so many examples of millionaires or billionaires who are still chasing more to try to fill some inner void. They're chasing more money, more power, more status, more fame, and it's not really getting them where they want to go. They still seem to be unhappy, right? And I'm generalizing in that statement. That's not all millionaires or billionaires, but we see that a lot, right? We see that with young people too, people who are serial daters, who are constantly looking for the next person to fulfill their life. So the first step on one's journey to self-mastery, which as I describe in the book, is an ongoing process. It's not just one end destination. Mm-hmm. It's realizing I must look within, not outside. For some of the answers in my life.
Well, I find it really fascinating. You have a phrase here in regards to your intention to help others to find their joy and spread their light to the world. And that's so different from the message that I was getting, especially when I was working for the Christian radio station back in the 80s and early 90s. where these people who were, again, associated with the radio station, because I don't want to paint a broad brushstroke here or make a generalization, but they were more interested in, quote unquote, saving the souls of others. And I thought, oh, wait a minute, why is that any of your business? You know, you talk about a personal relationship and so on and so forth. Why don't you take care of your life and let them determine the direction that they want to go? Whereas you are talking about providing an opportunity for people to continue to ask those questions and hopefully then find the answers to those questions, but from a real standpoint, not some superficial standpoint of the material world, capitalism and free enterprise world, that kind of thing, because it seems to me that you are wanting people, and you use the word joy. Is there a difference between joy and happiness in your book?
I use the words somewhat interchangeably. However, I would describe joy as an even deeper state of being, actually what I call each human being's birthright and natural state of being, which is happiness kind of exists in this duality between happiness and sadness. I get something I want, I feel a little happy, I go through a challenge, I feel sad. Joy is a deeper quality that can be awakened to that is unconditional and omnipresent. It's ever with every human being. In the same way that if you look at the ocean, on the surface, the waves are kind of tumultuous and moving around, but deep within the ocean, there's undercurrents. We can say that happiness is high, but that joy is deep.
Ah, I like that. I like that. That's very cool. So in putting this together, this guide to self-mastery, what from your perspective, what was the catalytic moment in your life? And I want to be respectful. I was going to say your young life, because I can, I honestly, having spoken with you over the last few weeks, I consider you to be an old soul, because obviously you are coming in with information that is not new to me per se. Okay. It is because of the way you are presenting it, because you're presenting it through the body of a very young individual, 18, 19 years of age.
Yes.
And quite honestly, I don't think there's anybody that can challenge you on your findings, on your guidance, if you will, because on the one hand, it's nothing new, but it's new because it's coming from you, because you're a unique individual.
Yes.
Talk to us about that.
Yeah, so I began my journey at around 14 or 15 years old when I was struggling quite a lot. I was not always what you might call on this kind of path of self-mastery or this path of joy, this journey of joy. The very catalyst for my path was the fact that I was on an opposite path. I struggled quite a lot with insecurity, and I was diagnosed with depression, very high anxiety, and ADHD. Right. And so I remember, you know, daily dealing with panic attacks. I would go to the top floor of my home and I would curl up on this old couch and just place my hand over my stomach, and it was nodding and throbbing with anxiety and with tension. And every time I would try to eat, I would throw up because I couldn't, my body was not leaving the fight or flight state. I wasn't moving into that state of restfulness. And so this led to a lot of inner reflection, which is, you know, as a child, I was very happy, very filled with imagination and wonder and joy. And all of a sudden, I was finding myself just in this kind of state of inner turmoil. And I'd look to the outside world for my answers. You know, maybe if I just got better grades, maybe if I was just a little bit better perceived by other people, maybe if I got more money or was in a new relationship, that would be the solution. And finally, when all of that started to fail, I started to look within. And I said, you know, all I really want is to feel well within myself. And that's what kind of the book touches on, which is human beings are either in one of two states. They're either experiencing tremendous well-being and expressing it to others, or they're looking for tremendous well-being. These are really the two states that we find human beings in. And we can define well-being as a calm, creative state of mind and an open, loving heart. And most people are looking for that. And so I started my journey because I was looking for that and I did not know where to find it. And it was then that I started to kind of feel a guiding presence in my life. And I read countless books from philosophers, leaders of world religion, spiritual traditions, neuroscientists, scientists, all types of different walks of life, all different types of arenas of life, to figure out how could I reach this state of well-being? How could I uncover it? And it was through that journey that I began to tremendously transform. And as I kind of describe now, I'm one of the happiest people I know. And I say that not to boast. I say that because what I've uncovered is that within every human being is a natural state of joy, that when allowed to fully shine through, our birthright is this joy, is this love, this creativity, this wisdom, right? This is the very nature of who we are, right? And so all I wanted to do once I started to discover it for myself, and I kind of moved into the light and out of the darkness, I should say, was I wanted to share it with other people. And you touched on earlier, you said, you know, you talked about on the Christian radio that you were on, that there's this idea of saving other souls. And I think all people, whether they're Christian, atheist, Buddhist, whatever it is that they might subscribe to, whatever their belief system might be, are looking for a sense of world harmony, world peace, you know, looking for a sense of love and well-being, right? I think that that's pretty a universal thing. But what I've kind of found is that we're looking for it in all the wrong places. When I was able to unlock well-being within myself, my only desire became to share it with other people, right? Which is, if you've ever had an experience in your own life where you were feeling tremendous joy, tremendous love, you could look at a stranger and love them. You could look at someone you've never met and feel a sense of care and compassion for them. Whereas if you've ever had a time in your life where you were tremendously upset, tremendously angry, maybe jealous, you could look at someone who you've loved your whole life and cast hatred towards them, right? So it is actually this inner state that each human being is seeking. And when we teach human beings to find this inner joy, to allow it to come through, to allow them to feel safe and in control over themselves, we don't have to teach them to be kind. We don't have to teach them to be loving. It becomes the main motivation. You know, there's a quote that I love so much, which says that love loves expression. So that world peace lies not in the outside world, but in the transformation of each individual.
And I find it interesting, too, that though I can appreciate the perspective these folks took, you know, some 30, 40 years ago, in terms of, quote unquote, wanting to save others. And I was even challenged on my, quote unquote, salvation as they saw it. I was even accused of not being saved and not being ready to meet God. You know, and I thought, that's odd, because I've been talking to God all, you know, quite a good portion of my life.
Yes.
You know, and yet from our perspective, yours and mine, I'm not here to foist on anyone any particular perspective or philosophy. And when I offer an observation, for example, it's mine. Okay. You want to take it on? That's up to you, not me, but it's mine. And with opinions, beliefs, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest difference. It's like, we're not out there. You and I are not out there, quote unquote, proselytizing. People can tune into this podcast. People can pick up a copy of your book, which, folks, by the way, he just happens to be an 18-year-old's guide to self-mastery. We hope you will get a copy of it. And by the way, the website, ladies and gentlemen, is rqselfmastery.com. That's rqselfmastery.com. And we're here to offer, it's like when I say, talk about choices, to give people choices and knowledge of those choices. What we do, we lay out this big table. It's a smorgasbord. I got to tell you, this is one long table. I've been doing this a while and been sharing all kinds of different perspectives and philosophies and so forth from thousands of different people. And it's entirely up to the individual if they want to come up and partake. You know, not going to come knocking on your door, you know, not going to accost you in the grocery store. It's there if you want it, you know. It's entirely up to you. And I do you find too that when people find out about your book, when you share your book on self-mastery, your philosophy, your perspectives, your observations on the world and so forth, that people are pretty receptive, that because you it's not coming across as you trying to convert them to some perspective?
No, I think people are highly receptive because I think everyone is seeking something. And I think in the book, what I try to give is I one of the first things I say is I'm not selling a brand or myself or anything like that. The only thing I'm interested in giving people is every step, every tool, every teaching, every principle that brought me from darkness into light, that brought me from fear into love, from pain into joy, because I really think that that is just the birthright of each individual. And, you know, you talk about this idea of saving. What I like better is the word service and self-empowerment, which is that each individual is self-empowered. The first thing a true master will ever tell you is that you too are a master. It's not about, you know, the master is above the student. The master is simply the one who has recognized that everyone within them holds that potential for mastery. Mm-hmm. And so that's what the book tries to share is I say that I don't separate anyone based on belief system or religion or whatever their life has taken them. My only principle is that the birthright of every human being is joy, and that every human being is either in a state of that joy and looking to give it to others or is seeking it for themselves. And that's why I talk about spreading one's light to the world is, you know, there's a Zen teaching which said one candle flame, one lit candle flame can light up billions of other candle flames from that single flame. And so that when we find peace and joy, the first desire becomes to spread it to others. Mm-hmm. It's a two-way street. You know, we talk about this idea of in a lot of spiritual traditions, serving others or serving ourselves. And what you really find is that it's a two-way street, that when you help someone else find love and joy, you are also uplifted. When you are taking care of yourself and cultivating a calm state of mind within yourself, you're also in a position to further uplift. So it's not about me or them. It's about kind of this universal sense that when each person is allowed to is given the understanding to find that light within, the whole is uplifted. Everyone else is uplifted, right? I don't know if you've ever had this experience, Dr. Dugan, where, you know, you've walked into a room with someone and immediately they're not even talking to you. They're not trying to teach you or give you anything, but their presence just uplifts you. Mm-hmm. They're just emanating this love and this peace and this joy and this compassion, where just being around them uplifts you. Or in the same sense, someone might have good intentions, but you walk into a room with them and you can feel that they might be in pain. You can feel that they might be struggling, right? So that it's not about my light versus your light. It's that when we all find that light within, when we all cultivate this joy and this love and this creativity and this confidence and this authenticity, we uplift everyone else. And that's what the main desire becomes. You know, the first, I always say this too, you know, anytime you see a funny joke or you think of something funny, your first desire is to go share it with a friend. Hey, have you seen this? Have you heard about this? Mm. Whenever a good experience happens to you, the first experience is to share it. Oh my God, you're not going to believe what happened, right? Love loves expression. So when we're allowed to let love shine through ourselves, we naturally look to uplift other people, not by overpowering them, not by being their savior, but by seeing the light that's within them, even if it's been clouded. And that's what true self-empowerment is about, which is you serve others, but not to be above them or below them. You serve them as an equal.
Mm. Do you think that the founding fathers of this country had it right when they said that there are certain inalienable rights, and among them, now they only list three. I thought you got plenty of parchment. Come on. Our life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And again, understanding your definition between happiness and joy, they didn't give us happiness. That was not an inalienable right. It was the pursuit thereof. That seems to catch a lot of people up, because it seems like in our material, and I'll use these terms. I'm not negative on capitalism and free enterprise. Don't get me wrong, but in our material capitalistic free enterprise world, it seems like we're always pursuing something, and sometimes we don't even know what it is. but we're pursuing it.
Yes.
As opposed to having it, you know, because it's, and it's like, okay. And then this was, I thought this was an interesting way that this was phrased. For example, and I use this as the example. Over 400 years, we had a segment of our population that was enslaved. And then all of a sudden, they were free. What are you going to do with that? How are you going to express that? You know, they wanted it. They pursued it. They went after it every which way they could, and so forth. And so I'm wondering if and I hope that that's not a disrespectful analogy by any means, but it just seems to me like, well, talk to us a little bit about this aspect of not just the pursuit of happiness, maybe even the pursuit of joy, the pursuit of fulfillment in oneself, as opposed to trying to find it outside ourselves.
Yeah, so I think they got it right, because when they talk about the pursuit of happiness, what they're also talking about is happiness as a choice, which is, you know, if we were forced to be happy, that wouldn't be true happiness. If we were forced to be loving, that wouldn't be true love. It's the fact that true joy and true love is unconditional, which means it's our free will to choose it or not. So that's what's so powerful, is that we've also been given this freedom to choose to allow it for ourselves, in which he says, if you choose to be happy, no one and no thing can make you unhappy. And that's such a beautiful quote, because once you've made the choice that happiness and joy and love are qualities that you value and would like to experience, nothing can take them away from you. Yeah. And that's what's so beautiful about it. And then what happens, though, is that our society has kind of been separated from the core, maybe we can call the core wisdom or the core understanding that allows one to access those states. Mm. You know, when new babies come into this world, they're called little bundles of joy. When you see young children playing, you know, they're young and alive and you know, often just full of just bubbling enthusiasm and joy. And then we tend to lose it. You know, as we come into our teenage years and adult years, we tend to lose that spark, and we don't know why. And then we chase that spark in a new partner. We chase that spark in more money and more fame and more success. And again, these are not bad pursuits when you have true happiness or true joy within, right? So what I try to offer the reader and any people who I teach is the understanding that once you have uncovered this total state of well-being within, which doesn't mean you never experience sadness or you never experience negativity, but it empowers you to overcome any challenge in your life and rest in that dominant state of joy and love. It is from there that true fulfillment arises and your true creative, adventurous path in life unfolds, not pursuing something to get to well-being, but expressing well-being. And the final thing I'll say on that is Wayne Dyer has a beautiful quote, which he says, there is no path to happiness. Happiness is the path itself. And that when we find this well-being within, then our adventure, our success, our accolades, our relationships become incredibly enriching, because we're no longer looking to take from them, but we're overflowing with this sense of well-being, and we nourish and give to everything around us.
I would like you mentioned a quote earlier, just as you started talking about this. Who was the author of that quote? I know you mentioned Wayne Dyer at the end here, but what was the quote?
I mentioned Paramahansa Yogananda, the author of The Autobiography of a Yogi, and he said, if you choose to be unhappy, nobody can make you happy. But if you choose to be happy, nobody can make you unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
And that ties back to this idea of freedom.
Yeah. You know, and I find that interesting, too, from the standpoint if, and again, depending upon the philosophy you choose to accept, one of the things that has struck me is that, you know, the inalienable rights, for example, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, life and liberty, and so forth. From a more metaphysical and a much higher, more spiritual perspective, i.e., my eldest sister and my father are what some would say are on the other side. Okay. And life and liberty are irrelevant to them now. They mean nothing because of the realm that they're in. Now, they still have, and this is, and again, bear in mind, this is my belief. I don't know this, you know, I can only share my perspective, but they have the freedom to do whatever it is that they want to do now. I went through a program called Life Between Lives Hypnotherapy, where I went to my last past life, and then I came forward past my death in that lifetime to the space between, why they call it Life Between Lives. And you go through certain stages, and there have been studies that have been done by a Dr. Newton. I've got his books on my Audible.
He was the author of The Journey of Souls, right?
That's the one. You got it.
I went through the same hypnotherapy.
Did you really? Oh, wow. What I loved about it was the process that people, the essence that is truly us. And that's something I want to talk a little bit about in regards to this guide to self-mastery, in terms of the understanding from your perspective. What is your understanding of who you really are? Although I love one of my guests when I made that comment about, well, will there be a point where we'll know who we really are? And he said, no, there'll be a point where we'll know who we have always been. So Who do you think you have always been, or who you really are?
Yes. So I think there's actually a two questions there that I try to meditate on and reflect on, and I urge the reader to reflect on as well, which is not only who you are and have always been, but who are you choosing to be? And one of my favorite ideas is that this idea that we're not as linear as we've taken ourselves to be. You know, when people awaken to this, some of these spiritual or metaphysical ideas, and they awaken to this idea that, oh, maybe I'm a soul, or maybe I'm a spiritual entity, or maybe I'm a being of light or energy, mm-hmm. whatever it might be, they awaken to this deeper essence. There's a second part of that, which is, yes, this is the paradox, right? Yes, you are spiritual, and yes, you are human. It's not this or that, it's mm-hmm. this and that. So when answering that question, from my understanding, and this is only using the English language, which is limited. So mm-hmm. in the ultimate sense, we can say that divine essence is somewhat of a mystery. However, yeah. to use the English language the best I can, I would say that I am a soul, or a piece of the universe, what we could maybe call a spark of the divine, and that within everything and every living creature lies a spark of this divine light, this divine intelligence, and that the nature of this intelligence is love itself, that it is not subject to birth and death, but that it is able to experience life through many different perspectives, right? And then, so that is what I would say when I answer that question, who am I? But then there's the follow-up question, which is, who am I choosing to be? Because at the same time, I say that, but here I am. My name is Ryan. I'm in this human body. I'm operating on planet Earth, and I have all these relationships and experiences and connections, right? So we have this deeper essence of ourselves, which is beautiful, but then we also have this choice of who are we choosing to be as human beings, right? That's the personality. There's a beautiful quote that says, your personality creates your personal reality, or the story of your life. And then in the metaphysical sense, you know, people ask, like, what is the universe? What is creation? And my response to that is that the universe is a never-ending love story, and that we, as these spiritual beings, as the sparks of the divine, get to go in and experience these different stories. And so that right now you're experiencing the story of being Dr. Dugan, and all of your life experiences and your challenges and your triumphs and all the mini stories and the chapters in between. For me, I'm experiencing the story of what it's like to be Ryan Quirk and all of my stories and challenges and chapters in between. And when you see your life in this way, and you awaken to that light within, that essence within, what happens is you begin to shine that light through your human self, so that it's not so disconnected, right? So that your personality self, that in the story of your life, starts to reflect the nature of your divine essence. So we can call this divine essence love, so that as we awaken to that, we don't leave behind our humanity, but that our humanity begins to embody more and more love. The story of our own lives becomes a love story, a story of magic, a journey of joy. And so that's what I would say, which is, yes, you can awaken to that, but you're not leaving behind your humanity, your human story, your human identity. How can you bring that love into this story? How can you align your thoughts, your feelings, and your actions with creativity, love, and joy?
RQselfmastery.com is the website where you can find out more about Ryan Quirk, as well as the book, An 18-Year-Old's Guide to Self-Mastery. We hope that you will pick up a copy. It's available in various formats, soon to be available in Audible format. And that's something that we're working on to make happen. And I like one of the things that you say here, that you talk about your team. And one of the things that has, as I've tried to live by, that actually does help keep me humble, so to speak. Although the universe has a wonderful way of keeping me humble. If I get too big for my britches, something comes along to give me my comeuppance and say, "Hey, knock it off." I am where I am today because of thousands of people. You might even say my team. And you have a team of people, and we don't necessarily need to go down a list of them. But the reality is, you recognize that this is not all about Ryan Quirk, is it?
No, not at all, not in the slightest. And that's so I'll shout out my team really quickly. And first of all, my team extends just beyond these individuals in my life. But shout out to Kamar Burris Khan, one of my editors and marketer of the book. And shout out to my other editor, Alexander Lopez Levy. Both of them have been integral in the creation of this message and this process. I also would like to shout out my mom, Catherine Quirk, for supporting me and joining some of the marketing efforts. And that is maybe my close team when it comes to the book. But in a broader sense, self-mastery is not about thinking that we have to do it all ourselves. It is empowerment in the sense that we have the power to shape our lives, but that our lives are connected with everyone else's life as well, right? You know, just to, for example, this is happening over Zoom right now. So this is not just our creation. Someone had to have the wherewithal to create a computer and create the software and create all this. I don't know how to create a computer, right? So it's kind of awakening from this illusion of separation, but stepping into what I call, or what I've heard as being described, and what I like to refer to as collective individuality, that we are uniquely individual and have amazing creative talents within all of us, but that we are also a part of this collective, that me and you and anyone else is not separate, and that we are all interreliant. And one of the most beautiful ways that I've heard this described from a spiritual teacher is that even when you feel isolated and alone from other human beings, notice that as you breathe in and you breathe out, you're breathing with the trees, being that when you breathe out carbon dioxide, they're taking in that carbon dioxide and breathing out oxygen, right? The universe is an integrated whole and everything exists in relationship. So no, I did not do this myself at all. I love myself as a unique individual and love to express my creative talents. But without the help of my editor, my marketer, and so many other people in my life, my mom and my dad, my brothers, Tegan Quirk and Charlie Quirk, without all these other connections, you find that the never-ending love story of the universe is kind of like this tapestry. And each of us is a thread that cross-connects to every other thread. So that's some food for thought there, which is the next time you're feeling kind of isolated, understand that just to have the water bottle in front of you, the meal that's in front of you, think of the steps and the processes of other people, other beings, and forces of nature that went in to produce that, right? That you are valued and unique as an individual, but you are also always in relationship to this collective, what we might call unity, or this collective web of love.
I remember a news story about some entrepreneurs in Texas, and they were kind of focusing on the whole entrepreneurial explosion back in the 2010, 11, 12. And the people they were interviewing were talking about how they did this, and I did this all on my own, da 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 da. And I'm going, what? Do you understand that even if you did build that building that you're in, the brick and mortar, all by yourself, You made the bricks out of mud all by yourself, and so on and so on and so on. There is no business without customers. So at the very least, you owe the customers credit for your business even existing, let alone thriving and succeeding. And that's yes. One of the philosophies that I also live by, from the standpoint that and having conversations with your team myself, sharing with them that, you know, my goal is not to be successful. My goal is to make you successful, and in turn, I am successful. And I feel as though a lot of people have lost, even if you want to generalize that more, they've lost that concept. It seems as though somehow people have honed in on specific phrases, clauses, and so forth in our founding documents, rather than realizing that, no, you cannot take it in little pieces. You have to take it in its totality. Yeah, we have the First Amendment, but we also have the Second and the Third and the Fourth and the Fifth and so on. And even though you also may have, although you as an individual have these rights, guess what? Each one of us also has responsibilities. Talk to us about this aspect of self-mastery and how it relates to personal responsibility.
Yeah, well, I say that in the book I describe, it was a beautiful teaching that I heard from a wonderful metaphysical teacher, Bashar, that I recommend anyone listen to. And he said that responsibility, when we hear that word, we often associate it with the type of burden on ourselves. Oh, I'm responsible for this and this. But that responsibility quite literally means the ability to respond, meaning that responsibility is actually a freedom. It means that we are free to have the ability to respond to other people in our life and the various circumstances and situations in our life. Mm. And so that this is actually a freedom that we carry and that we possess, and it's actually a gift that we possess. So maybe if you're a parent and you're feeling burdened by the responsibility of your children, start to flip your perspective and see it as a gift that you get the ability to respond to your children. You get the ability to respond to other arenas of your life. And that's mm-hmm. what we're talking about when we talk about this idea of self-mastery, which is that it's taking responsibility for one of the only things you have true control over, which is your inner world, you know, this world of self, right? Which is, I can't reach into your brain, Dr. Dugan, and force you to think a certain thought. Mm-hmm. That is your free will. That's your freedom. That's your autonomy. You can't reach into my heart and make me feel a certain emotion directly. That's my freedom. But what we do get to do is take responsibility of our own inner environments to align our own hearts and our own minds so that we can sync up with one another, so that we mm-hmm. can inspire one another, so that we can share the authentic beings that we are. You know, and another idea touching on that idea of connection is that, you know, each individual carries their own beautiful, rich, and unique story. That's what your podcast is. Tell your story, right? But a story cannot exist without other characters in the story. So mm-hmm. each of us is the hero of our own lives and the support of all the other heroes of others in their own lives and in their stories. And we kind of create this collective story together.
Yeah.
Right. You know, how boring would it be to watch a movie with one character in one room the whole time? Right.
Well, I hate to tell you, but I actually did see a movie.
Did you?
where there was actually only one character. If I'm remembering the title of the movie, it was called, I believe it was called Alone. Okay. And the only character in it, the yeah. actor, Robert Redford, and he had gone sailing and he ran into some major challenges. And it really wasn't until the end of the movie when he was rescued by others. Yes, there were others at the end, but the majority of the film was all about his challenges and struggles out there on the open ocean all by himself.
Well, and even then,
that sorry, was fascinating.
Even then, we could say that he was still in relationship to the ocean, still yeah. in relationship to the boat. So while he was alone as a human being, he was not alone in the sense of his environment.
True. Right? I'll give you that. Absolutely. I'll give you that.
We cannot exist without being in relationship to everything around us.
Yeah.
And that starts to open us up to this idea of connectivity.
Ryan Quirk is our guest here on the program. Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. We're talking about his latest book, and it is An 18-Year-Old's Guide to Self-Mastery, as we continue here on Tell Me Your Story. I find all of this absolutely thrilling and exciting because of the prospects, because of the possibilities, which is, I think, really what you are wanting to share with people through this process of self-mastery, and realizing that as we talk here about giving people choices and knowledge of those choices, we are talking about the same thing of realizing that there are opportunities that abound. They are limitless, as the same, and I'm using the words interchangeably, choices, opportunities. Some might even call them challenges. Nothing wrong with that. And we can choose at any given moment to go a different direction. Yes. People do that all the time on the roads that we drive, sometimes to our consternation, but nonetheless, they're exercising their freedom of choice to go in a different direction. I only ask that you use your turn signals, please. That's what they're there for. But it seems as though, and I've talked about this on this program as well, there are many people who have been in generational programs through generations. Let me put it that way. And at least at present, they don't know any different. They don't, and some people will use the term entitlement programs, and you can call it whatever you want. It's there to help you. I was a recipient in my early 20s of one of these entitlement programs. Didn't stay there, but I was grateful that it was there for that period of time. But there are people who, one generation after another, that's what they know. They don't know anything else. And they have not received the education, or they haven't taken in the education to show them, oh, there's another way. Oh, I never even thought about that. And I use this little story to make the point as an analogy. This community lives up in the mountains. And in order to get to school or the grocery store or what have you, because there's this mist, this fog that permeates the top of the mountain where they have to traverse. And there's a road, there's that kind of thing. What they're told to do is follow the white line, that little white line along the shoulder of the road, until it comes to in the next sign, you know, and then you're there. You're there at the grocery store. You're there at the school. You're there at the church, and so forth. And so they do this day in and day out. This is just their life, okay? And then one day, the fog lifts, and this one individual is walking along the shoulder, and the fog is lifting, and he's looking up, and all of a sudden he sees a fork in the road. He sees another roadway going off in the distance, the other direction from the road he's on. And so now, he's faced with a choice. Do I keep going down this road that I know, that's comfortable, that's familiar, or do I exercise my freedom of choice, if you will, my free will? Do I, maybe I take that road to see what's down there? And we never know really what is down there. But a lot of times, because the other road is, it's just too comfortable. It's just too easy. And I'm sure you've heard this phrase before too, about a river. A river does not take, if I'm correct in this, the path of least resistance. It goes wherever it wants. I mean, take a look at some of these rivers that they've tried to they've tried to redirect. And in the course of a few years, the river has cut right back the direction it was going. Do you find that this Guide to Self-Mastery is going to help us to not only see the fork in the road, have the mist lift, but also choose to trust the universe to keep us safe, to keep us well, and so forth, and to guide us, hopefully using our intuition, down that road to where we might discover, who knows, some incredible things, some wonderful things for our lives.
Yes, well, this reminds me of a beautiful quote that I heard, which says, "You must step out of the known comfort in order to step into the unknown heaven," which is, we will be presented in all of our lives, just as within any good story, choices that could lead one way or lead the other. And the key is to see all the choices and all the paths as valid, that none of them are invalid. Even if one takes us down a challenging or dark path for a little bit, that's okay, because there can still be things that are learned from that. But that if we listen to the compass that's in our heart, it will always point us to our true magnetic north, which is when one decides to embark on their own journey of self-mastery. Because remember, each person contains that light. Each person contains that potential, right? And that this is a journey. It's not just one end destination. So already you are, in a sense, on your own journey of self-mastery, even if you don't know it yet. Yes. Oh, sorry. Were you about to say something?
I was going to say, we've talked about, of course, free will and choice and the inalienable rights and responsibility and so forth. And again, I do know that quote by Paramahansa about happiness. But there's another element that I think we need to incorporate before we wrap things up here. And that is, the reality is, whether you want to go to the metaphysical or not, that we affect one another. Now, we still have choice as to how we respond. But there is an effect. And you and I both know this by walking into a room that just had a gathering in it, and we get this feeling. It's either, you know, and it can be, you know, a feeling of, oh, hey, some really cool stuff happened here, or, ooh, you could cut the tension in here with a knife and there's nobody here, you know. Because they leave that behind. What is your thought in that regard? What's the juxtaposition when you start to incorporate that aspect of the impact that we have on one another, and especially with the connectivity that we have nowadays, literally globally?
Yeah, well, especially in this age of information and technology, we can connect in ways that we've never connected before. And if anyone's ever heard of that term, the butterfly effect, in which the flap of a butterfly's wings on one end of the globe could eventually cause a hurricane on the other. And I think that idea of how much our actions affect not only our own lives and our choices affect our own lives, but the lives of others, is actually the end of what we might call nihilism. Which is that, you know, nihilistic individuals are those who see their choices as having no purpose, kind of their life as being meaningless. But when we see that just a simple smile at a stranger might shift the course of that person's entire week, entire month, or their entire year, and in very extreme terms, their entire life, mm-hmm. or even lifetimes to come, how we choose to, you know, treat someone else could affect them for months or years to come. These little choices. And I remember one quote, one teaching, which said, if you could see the way in which the web of life was really connected, in which every heart influenced the whole, in which every individual being influenced one another, your jaw would be dropped, would be slack. Because mm-hmm. all of the little choices in your life to say a kind word to someone that you might not even know that well, to introduce yourself to someone, to turn one way instead of the other. That is where meaning in our human story lies, which is, I remember it's a time in my own life when I was still making my way out of that darkness, out of that negative space. And I remember myself in the gym. I was in a gym and I felt this kind of onset of a panic attack. My palms felt very sweaty. I felt lightheaded and dizzy, and I didn't feel so good. And I felt like, you know, anyone who has ever experienced a panic attack knows how incredibly real these feelings are. And a man came up to me and he said, "Hey man, you're looking great right now." I don't know, in the gym, he said I was looking in shape or something like that. And then he said, "Do you want to get some water?" And I don't know if he could intuitively sense that I was feeling a little bit off and was about to head down a worse path, but those few words, that interaction, I have carried with me over, I think it was about 3 years ago. I have carried with me to this day because him talking to me getting some water, his kind words, his energy, his smile was what prevented that full onset of a panic attack and allowed me to go home, relax, reset, meditate, and continue on my own path, right? So if those small actions can influence someone's path that much, imagine what those small actions over a large period of time, or even larger actions over a large period of time, might do for the course of the entire world.
Yeah.
I mean, we think of this age of information and technology with all these computers and smartphones. That once just started as an idea in someone's head. Someone had an idea to be able to communicate across much larger distances. And that one idea, that one invention, that one creation has changed human civilization as a whole. So never, ever underestimate the power of your thoughts, of your actions, and of your choices. This doesn't mean that every second of every day you have to be like, am I making the right choice? Am I not? Let your heart be your guide. Rest in that awareness and just, you know, love a little more, hate a little less, be a little kinder, smile a little more, laugh at yourself a little bit more, laugh at the world a little bit more. Aim to spread love. You know, love is that guiding compass, which is in whatever thoughts you're thinking, whatever action you're about to take, you can know if it's in or out of alignment by the degree to which it's fueled or not fueled by love.
Ladies and gentlemen, I will tell you that when I was in my very early 20s, pondering a lot of the things that we've been talking about here on this program today, someone walked up to me, who I knew very well, and made the comment that I was wise beyond my years, which was a little bit of a conundrum for me because I was grateful for that observation. Not that I believed it; it was just nice to hear. I was, thank you very much. But the conundrum was, okay, I'm 21 and someone is saying I'm wise beyond my years. Is there going to come a point where I'm going to catch up, you know, to that wisdom so that I'm no longer wise beyond my years, but my wisdom is way back there in my 40s and I don't have it anymore. Hopefully we continue to grow in our own individual wisdom. And I honestly think, Ryan, that the biggest key to that, in addition, of course, to picking up a copy of an 18-year-old's guide to self-mastery, is to spend time, as I have encouraged people during the decade of perfect vision, the 2020s, to spend time going within in that quiet, peaceful, calm, still place and listening to that still small voice. Talk to us about your observations before we wrap things up here.
There's a quote that I finish out my book with on the last page, which I don't want to spoil the whole like book. Not that it's a story. It is kind of a story in some ways. But the quote says, the question, if each human being is really honest within themselves, they already know the answers that they seek. For the question would not be in their head if the answer were not already in their heart. Right? And so, it's exactly what you said. It's that we must become quiet enough to listen. You would be amazed at what 5 minutes of just sitting by yourself, relaxing, focusing on your breathing, and asking questions will do for you. You know, there's one last thing I'll say too, which is I heard a quote from Tony Robbins where he said, "The quality of your questions determines the quality of your life." If you keep asking, why is my life so bad? Why is everything not working? You'll get a lot of answers as to why things are not working. But if you instead ask a new question, you say, how can I make things better? How can I allow more love in my life? You'll start to get answers with that too. That brings me back to the Jesus quote too, which said, ask and ye shall receive, seek and ye shall find, knock and it shall be opened unto you. And I'm not even saying that in a religious sense. Mm-hmm. I'd find truth in all spiritual traditions and in all religions and all practices. But That is just such a beautiful quote, which is, it's exactly what you said, Dr. Dugan. Spend just a few minutes, if you're feeling confused, if you're feeling anxious, sitting by yourself and going within. Just ask a new question. Frame the question in a positive light. Where attention goes, energy flows. And if you place your attention on love, you will remove all woes.
And there's an interesting set of phrases that people will use primarily around food, primarily around someone who is cooking. And they'll be eating along and they'll look up at the cook and say, "This ain't bad." Whereas someone else will also be eating and look up and, "This is good. This is really good." And it does say an awful lot about one's mindset and where they're coming from. The old proverbial glass half full, half empty thing. And of course, now I've thrown a third element in there, and that is, what's the glass full of? And I guess the beautiful thing is, you get to decide. What we have to decide now is how we're going to wrap this up. Oh, wait a minute. I know how to do that. I want to thank you so much, Ryan Quirk, for sharing with us your latest work, which is An 18-Year-Old's Guide to Self-Mastery. It's available at his website, which is rqselfmastery.com. We'll be linked to that website so that you can find out more about the book, about Ryan and the work he's doing, the teachings that he provides. He's got a lot of great stuff up there. And thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Dugan. This is a wonderful, wonderful show that you have. I'm going to be spreading it with as many people as possible.
I also have three final questions that I want to ask you that I ask all of my guests.
All right.
But before I do that, let me tell you, I want to thank you for listening to and watching Tell Me Your Story. New paradigms for a new world, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. We are here on Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., Wednesdays at 9 a.m., and Monday through Friday from 8 to 9 a.m., streaming live at those times at richarddugan.com. 9 opportunities for you to hear 9 different guests, 9 different subjects, 9 different conversations. We hope that you will take part. We're also podcasting all of these on SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Stitcher, Player FM, Blueberry, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, and many other locations, just too numerous to mention right now. We're on YouTube, where you can watch these interviews. We hope you'll do that. And subscribe and select notifications so when a new conversation is posted, you'll be notified and you can tune into that conversation. We ask that if you can support the work we're doing financially, we would be so gratefully appreciative. We have a PayPal account. It is there for your security as well as ours. And when they ask you for an email address to whom you're sending, richard@richarddugan.com is the email to put in, richard@richarddugan.com. And as I've already mentioned, take time during this decade of perfect vision, the 2020s, to go within and listen to that still small voice, as we have already talked about here on this program. With all that being said, we now go to those final three questions that I ask all of my guests. And again, great thanks to my guest for being a part of Tell Me Your Story. First of those three questions is, who is Ryan Quirk?
Ryan Quirk is, I guess, me in some sense, an aspect of me. And it's I'm a human being doing my best to spread more love in the world and to live my own love story to the fullest.
What gets you up in the morning?
Joy. Joy, joy, joy. The journey of joy that is life in all of its challenges and all of its triumphs. I'm every day I wake up in such reverence of this miracle that we call life.
And finally, what was your best day?
This one, I guess so. I really have loved all of my days equally because I learned something new, whether they were a little higher or a little lower. I learned something every day. So maybe I would either say this day or every day.
All right. Well, once again, Ryan, thank you so much for being with us here on Tell Me Your Story. We look forward to having you back again in the not too distant future to continue this conversation.
Thank you. Thank you. This has just been absolutely wonderful.
And I thank you once again for listening to and watching Tell Me Your Story. And until our next broadcast, podcast, videocast, love to Lal. Jeanette, I am still listening. Dad, continue to be happy because I am. Smokey, I'll see you on the other side. And to my dear friend Zorro, aho, aho.